Hey everyone, welcome to Entrepreneurship by Design with Dr. C. I'm your host, Dr. Caroline, and thank you so much for joining us today. Entrepreneurship looks different for everyone. How and why we start our business, challenges that occur, pivots we have to make, success we achieve, all while life is happening. That's why I love sharing these inspiring entrepreneurs with you and shed light that there's enough room for everyone to succeed and thrive, even if you're in the same industry.
We had a book club inside of this group and we went through my book. And one of the guys afterwards, he said, you know, I'm in this group, Front Row Dads. I put in the work. I've got four kids. My marriage is great because of everything I've been working on. And he's like, after reading this book, I finally get it. Because the book's called Paper Cuts, The Art of Self-Delusion. He said, you know, I didn't realize it because I think like I'm ahead of the pack. I'm doing all these things a lot of other men aren't doing. And yet I see everywhere now, it's not the big things, the little paper cuts I'm giving myself all over the place. He's like, they hurt after a while.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Entrepreneurship by Design with Dr. C. I'm so glad you're here with us today because we have an incredible guest with us. After 10 years of sitting in the CEO chair of two different eight-figure companies, both on the Inc. 5000 list, Brent found that he was stuck, unhappy, and unloved, mostly by himself. Being the father to two amazing teenage daughters and recently divorced, in late 2022, he made the choice to step away from his corporate career and surrender, maybe for the first time, allowing for divine inspiration to work its magic and wrote his first book, Paper Cuts, The Art of Self-Delusion. Published in August of 2023, he is on a mission to help others find the path to living a life by choice instead of by chance, shifting out of the victim mentality into one where we can fully show up and live bold. Thank you so much for being here today, Brent. It is such a pleasure to have you. And I would love for you to just dive into your journey, how you got here today, and then we can go a little bit deeper.
You know, my journey is probably not all that different from what a lot of people have gone through. Just all the circumstances look different, right? I was chasing what I thought my dreams were, my purpose, my, you know, getting married, having kids, having a job that was, I thought, fulfilling and working my way up and finding myself in the CEO chair. And in what I wanted, that was like ultimate success, right? I sat in that chair for about 10 years. I got to a point where it was like, I feel stuck. Like it doesn't feel good anymore. Like this is not fulfilling. This isn't what I thought it was going to be. And of course, there's a lot of other things in my life that led to that too, through just learning about yourself in marriage and having kids and just integrating yourself, you know, fully in society at different levels socially. And I just reached this point, I was like, I can't do this anymore. Yeah. And my marriage kind of fell apart and I had to rethink how I was showing up for myself. And I had started a meditation practice about a year and a half ago, maybe close to 2 years ago. And so it was about a year into it. So last December, I got this calling to step out of the role I was in. And then about 3 weeks later, I got another kind of divine tap on the shoulder. It's like, yeah, you're going to write a book. And I looked up and I was like, you're kidding me, right? Not a writer. It wasn't my aspirations. That's not what I considered winning in life. Really honest, it wasn't what I was chasing. And the next day it was like, journal this down because here's your title. Yeah, I sat on it for a week, just shaking my head going, this can't be real. And it was January 7th of this year, 2023, that I did a little research. I was listening to a Tim Ferriss podcast. I thought, hey, him and I think a lot alike. So I looked into like what he uses to write his books. And I just started and I got really smart about it and tried to use my intellect and outline the whole thing. And guess how well that worked?
Rough.
Yeah, not at all. So it was beginning of February and I was about ready to blow the whole project up. And I just got this inspiration again to just keep going, but this time to let go. And that was really hard. And it took me another couple of days and I was like, fine, I surrender. I let it all go. And I just started writing 4 hours a day, four times a week. And in 60 days, I had written a book. And it was barely comprehensible that it all kind of come together when I wasn't trying, show the world that I was smart and I was all these things. Like those things became distractions. And what came through and why I think I was able to write being a first-time author and an entrepreneur, not somebody who writes a lot. I wasn't writing it for somebody else. I wasn't like, hey, I'm going to write, you know, this book on this topic to make everybody else educated on this thing or tell the stories. It was actually for me. Like that book ended up being for me. And it just so happens, it resonates with a lot of other people because at the end of the day, a lot of our stories are the same. Mm-hmm. We just have a lot of layers on top that make them look very different. It's just hard to get to that root piece, right?
Yeah. Wow. It's incredible just where you've been, where you're at, and where you're going. But I love the fact that you allowed yourself to start the meditation practice too, because I think a lot of times things come through. I've been meditating on and off for years, but it's so interesting when I'm really practicing it and like consecutively, things start coming through. And I love that it came through for you about the book. And I love that you started with like wanting to sound smart and intelligent and all these things in the beginning with the book, but then let go and really focused on you and your journey, being able to allow that to come through and letting go. Because I think no matter where we are in life, sometimes, well, not everybody, but a lot of people have a hard time letting go of this idea or this way of doing things. And you allowed yourself to let go. What was that process for you to really let go and just do it?
It was the most difficult thing I've ever done in my life. And I am finding that I still have to practice that. And honestly, it will probably be my life's lesson continual for the rest of my time on earth. I'm finding every day I've gripped so tightly to control, you know, due to fear mostly in so many areas of life that it's going to take the rest of life to fully explore and let go of things. But it was beautiful. It was, you know, I believe this process of finally like letting go, really letting go of our fears and letting life happen, like being present, right? That's what helped me finally lose like the last 10 to 15 pounds I've never been able to lose my whole life. It's what allowed me to create consistent rituals of either exercise or meditation. All of these things are able to finally show up in my life that food couldn't correct. I couldn't pressure myself into like all these, like, couldn't control it. And once you let it go, it's this weird like chemical shift that happens in you too. It's pretty amazing.
No, absolutely. And I think that's a huge part. A lot of people have that fear of failure or success and it blocks them, but it's very courageous what you were able to do. And publishing a book, it does take vulnerability and courage, especially you're writing it for yourself. I think that's where a lot of success happens. And I've spoken to other authors, and when they've written it for themselves, there seems to be a lot more success because it's not like this agenda. It's more of, it's like coming from the heart and soul. And that's what it sounds like too, what you've been able to create. And by publishing that book, in what ways did you process the writing and sharing your story challenge you personally? And how have readers responded to shape your perspective on vulnerability and authenticity?
I get goosebumps thinking about it. I was on a podcast a couple months ago, and I had the guy ask me, he's like, I never listened to any of my stuff. Did you read your book? I'm like, yeah, I read it 37 times. He's like, what? Like, yeah. It was for me. Like, it's become my like non-theological Bible. Like this is my lesson, and I've had to beat myself over the head with it 37 times and probably will have to 37 more. Like, it's been really amazing. I keep pulling nuggets out of it for myself. I actually said in the book that I don't know who wrote this. It came through my hands. I look back through and it's like, dang, I didn't understand even everything I was fully writing. What's interesting is the book is not just my story. In those 60 days, besides writing 4 days a week, I had coffee or lunch with people 3 days a week. That was kind of my commitment. I didn't know why I was finding old friends or just people I normally just had lunch or coffee. I just asked questions and recorded it. Stuff came through in their lives. Yeah. They were actually my lessons through their lessons. And it just continued. I'm part of this group called Front Row Dads. And this community of men, it's family men with businesses, not businessmen with families. So it shifts priorities, right? Like, everybody in it shows up a little differently. So we're all there for self-growth reasons, but also to make sure that we put ourselves and our family in front of everything else society says is important. We had a book club inside of this group, and we went through my book. And one of the guys afterwards, he said, you know, I'm in this group, Front Row Dads. I put in the work. I've got 4 kids. My marriage is great because of everything I've been working on. And he's like, after reading this book, I finally get it. Because the book's called Paper Cuts, The Art of Self-Delusion. He said, you know, I didn't realize it because I think like I'm ahead of the pack. I'm doing all these things a lot of other men aren't doing. Mm-hmm. And yet I see everywhere now, it's not the big things, the little paper cuts I'm giving myself all over the place. He's like, they hurt after a while. You know, so that's just to share like a lesson that's come through for other people as well too. But the feedback's been good.
Yeah, I believe it. And it's so profound too, the paper cuts, because it could be so small, but it could also be very deep a cut. You might not realize you're getting cut on the same area too. Mm-hmm. It can continue to not really heal because you're not allowing it to. And I love that analogy and being able to really hear it from other people and just the feedback. And I'm curious, what other feedback have you gotten from your book? Because I know it's recent, but it's also your journey and what you heard from others as well.
So the feedback has been, I mean, really positive. It's got almost a 5-star perfect review on Amazon by a lot of independent people. And the feedback really is around what I set out for the book to do, which is I said, if this book is successful, we'll do one thing. It's not prescriptive. It doesn't give you a checklist like a lot of books do. Oh, do these 3 steps and you're going to be amazing. I don't believe in that, right? Because we all have our own journey, our own path. And I said that if the book is successful, it will give people permission to explore themselves, to ask the hard questions, because they've seen somebody else ask those questions and survive and come through and tell hard stories around it, yet also see the beautiful moments that come from those really difficult moments too.
No, you're absolutely right. It gives me chills hearing this, because I think people can really relate to that, where it's not a one size fits all. I truly believe it is not. Everybody's so different. Every journey is different. That's even what this channel is based on, is showing that there's room for everybody. But asking those hard questions, understanding yourself a little bit more when those tough challenges come into play. And in your book, you talk about the concept of living a life by choice rather by chance. Can you share a pivotal moment where you consciously felt to choose the different path, and how did that shape your trajectory?
Gosh, it's just shown up everywhere in my life. And I got these lessons through one being, you know, spending 20 years working through your way up through corporate America, starting businesses, becoming CEO, and putting that all to the side to look at something different. Not only the rewards that come with that, but the, you know, public notoriety, which today means nothing to me, but the all these other things, and choosing that that's not really healthy for me. That's not improving my marriage. It's not making my conversations with my kids any better. In fact, it's arguably making it worse, because I'm stressed out and concerned about what that image looks like, or how I'm showing up for all those other people, forgetting about showing up for me. Right. And it's, if the concepts or the stories or who I am today rub people the wrong way, it's that I firmly believe today that you have to put yourself first in life. And so many people call that narcissism. Mm. And it could be, right? Mm-hmm. There's an unhealthy way to do it where it is narcissism. And yet that fine line is actually, the other side of it is exactly what we should be doing. And the thing I just didn't understand in life was that I thought I loved my kids. I thought I gave back because I was a doer. I was a fixer. I was a problem solver. You know, I gave my time up to other people. I was never actually giving anything. It was all a facade, because I never gave it to myself. I never had it for myself first.
Yeah.
So the love I was giving, I mean, it looked like love on the surface, but it was conditional, right? Mm-hmm. So until I found love for myself, like really starting to trust and love myself, I couldn't give unconditional love. And the time I gave to other people, again, it was conditional. You know, it came with, well, wait a minute, I did that for you. How could you possibly not do this for me, or treat me this way, or not see everything I'm doing for you? Oh, that's conditional.
Yeah.
Came with strings attached, right?
Absolutely. I appreciate you sharing that, because that's one of my taglines, is put yourself at the top of the priority list. Because a lot of times, maybe more women than men do it, but men do it too, just like what you explained. And I think it's so important to highlight the fact that when we don't set boundaries, when we don't pour love into ourselves, when we are not taking care of ourselves, we fall short. We aren't able to really connect on such a deeper level. And even through meditation and other factors, where you were able to discover that and really pour into yourself. But it takes so much courage and vulnerability to share that as well, of where you were at and where you are now. And a lot of people, yes, will say, oh, that's being narcissistic. But I think that word is thrown around a lot, especially being a former therapist.
Yeah.
But I think part of that is being able to recognize that if we aren't setting those boundaries, we're discrediting ourselves, distrusting ourselves, just not being able to really fully care about ourselves. And we aren't showing up for ourselves or others at that same sentence as well. And being able to understand we're all different. We all have different needs, but we have to come first, because then we're able to give more. We're able to show up more powerfully. And I know a big part of that is living bold for you. And you talk about that in your book as well, and finding your bold. And I know we kind of talked about letting go, but how did you find your bold?
Yeah. So the bold piece, not talked about too much in the book. It's really where I've built the brand of how I want to continue to teach and coach and show up in the world, is around living bold. And for me, that means finding your personal agency, stepping back into it, finding choice, right?
Right.
It's living by choice, not by chance. And when we do that, it means we can show up with friends, with our family, in the world, and not have to do things because somebody else wants us to, or we feel guilty, or there's shame, or we feel pressure. No, we're going to make a choice that's best for us. And that's bold, right? And when you can walk into a room, you're bringing a different presence with you, a boldness that's, I define it as courageous, authentic, and honestly, sometimes wild, right?
Yeah.
It's so empowering and amazing to not only witness it in yourself, but to watch other people that actually show up bold. Because I know I would look at that sometimes and I'd be like, they're just an asshole. It's like, no, they love themselves in a healthy way. And I'm jealous is what it really was. Right.
Yeah. No, that's true. And I mean, I think a lot of times we don't know what maybe somebody has gone through or how they're showing up. It's like, we feel a certain way because of what's being projected out there. And I think it's great to recognize that. And not everyone recognizes that or allows ourselves to acknowledge it. But I think that's part of just really showing up in the world and how we live our life and being intentional in how we are showing up. And I'm really curious, what was the missing link for you in those life moments to really start living intentionally, like before you started living more intentional?
You know, it's funny. I got told throughout most of my life that I was the least empathetic person ever. And as it turns out, I'm actually one of the most empathetic people. And things happened. One, I used my intellect to feel and see the empathy, but not give credit to it, not verbally or even physically show it. I just would blow through it. And, or I would be so afraid of it for myself because I just didn't really trust myself that I didn't allow it to show up. So as I started this meditation, I started to see where that empathy actually lived in my life. And it was really cool. And it allowed me to see and hear people in a way that I've never been able to do before. I wanted more of it. You know, I could have conversations with people and I just knew, even though their story was different, I could see behind what they were, the words, right? I could see in between the words. And I wanted more of that. And I wanted it with my kids and I wanted it with my intimate, you know, relationship with my partner. That's what hooked me. True connection, right?
Yes. And connection is everything. Even if we try to negate it or not acknowledge it, I think that is the foundation of everything, being able to connect. It's our human nature. How we do it might be different, but being able to at least connect on those levels. And, you know, it's really interesting. I know your book really emphasized the importance of shifting from that victim mentality. How do you see this shift impacting not only individuals' lives, but also the broader business and societal landscapes?
Yeah. One of the things that was a part of the impetus for how I was feeling and writing the book was seeing, you know, through my own kids, just the extreme amount of depression and anxiety that was, you know, part of it from COVID and kids having to be at home, you know, homeschooling, even in public schools, also just social media. And just, it was bad enough in adults and it was horrible in kids, right? Levels of depression, anxiety, and pathological, you know, the numbers medically went up by double digits. You know, it was crazy. And as I dug into it in my own life, I realized when we live by chance and not by choice, we're always the victim because that's when life happens to us and not by us or through us. You know, Viktor Frankl wrote about this in his book, Man's Search for Meaning, you know, when he was locked up in the concentration camps in World War II, and knowing that no matter what happened to him, he always could choose his thoughts and how he was going to show up the next day, just mentally, right?
Yeah.
And that small choice is our personal agency. And it's so much deeper than that. Like, we get stuck in like, we have artificial intelligence, so to speak, in our body, right? Like, we do something one time and our body just naturally logs it and just does it over and over and over again. It's how our sight works. It's like when we're looking, we don't see everything at once. We see the things that are changing, right? And that's how our mind works with a lot of cognitive stuff as well, too. If we've done it before, it just, you know, we just let it keep happening kind of behind the scenes because our brain doesn't want to use power for it. And we do that with choice. We just let the same choices happen again and again and again. And sometimes we do it because we're afraid. Other times we do it because we're lazy or we just forget about it. But when we choose, when we are present in life, right? You can't help but see it and be like, oh, I had a choice there. Oh, I don't need to see it that way. You know, oh, they must be hurting because that's not like them to react like that. I'm going to get curious. And that's where I found, for me, curiosity has become my like superpower, my secret weapon.
I love that. I'm just like, yes, because I think too, when we're able to really look at things in an open-minded way versus being closed off, we learn so much more because we don't know what we don't know, but we don't know it if we don't ask, or if we don't ask for just like in interest, knowing mm-hmm. what's going on for that person, because we're not mind readers. We're never going to be. We can try, but yeah. I don't know how successful that will be. But being able to just understand where the person's coming from and have that curiosity. I do these trainings for the prison system in California on motivational interviewing. And that's one of the main aspects of motivational interviewing, is remain curious, be open when you're asking these questions to your clients or your customers, whatever it may be. And that's a big part of it. And I love that you said that, because I think curiosity opens up beautiful opportunities for us to grow and connect with one another. And I know you are a father of two teenage daughters. And as a father, how has your personal transformation influenced your approach to parenting and guiding them in making life choices? Because I know a lot of things you talk about are choices.
Yeah. So the curiosity piece has been interesting, because, you know, I'm finding that most of my control issues, or most people's control issues, is because of fear, right? We're afraid of something. And curiosity and fear cannot live in the same room. So as I've become, of course, as a parent, you're afraid. Are they going to do drugs? Are they going to get good grades? What if they bully somebody, or they get bullied? What if, you know, they get pregnant, or they have, well, all these things, right?
Right.
They're all just fears. And as I shifted how I showed up into this place of curiosity, things got weird at first, and they didn't understand, like, who are you, Dad? And then over a few months, it's like, oh, we start having deeper conversations, because I'm not trying to control things or trying to steer the conversation so I get the answer that I want, because I need to know the answer. Just listen, just ask questions. And it was hard sometimes. You're biting your tongue going, oh my God, right? But as I sat in curiosity, it gave them permission to open up, to tell me things that I'm glad I know, but I don't really want to know, you know? And it shifted that relationship where they didn't feel like they had to hide things from me, and then from themselves ultimately.
Absolutely. And I think that's so important, that you are able to have those open conversations. Maybe it's a little TMI for some moments, but it's so amazing that you have that space for them to come to you versus going to their friends and maybe getting a different answer, where you have a lot of life experience and being able to really impact them and help them make those choices that are best for them as well. Not like impacting them in the sense of they have to do what you say, but more of being able to have a safe space to do that. And I'm curious, what lessons on your journey are you really hoping that can impact them on theirs?
Yeah, what I've tried to model mm-hmm. is that I think that one of the most difficult things for kids today, especially with social media, is there's all of this input, especially videos showing them how to do things. There's kind of one way, you need to be this way. And none of that is true. And I went through that just in my own journey of business and coming out of it and then writing a book. And I honestly can tell you where I'll be in 2 years, because I'm doing, like, I'm writing another book and I'm doing some coaching and I'm doing some other consulting things. And maybe I'll step back into business. Maybe I won't. And it's okay, because I just show up and I have questions. I bring who I am today to the table. I try to shift and open up communication in ways that, again, just tied back to that curiosity piece. Mm-hmm. And when I'm fully present, opportunities, possibilities show up. I just would have never dreamt of, couldn't have fabricated, couldn't have. So it's to them that there is no one way. Don't need to live in fear that you're not looking like, sounding like, or doing what all these other people are doing. And that just showing up and actually being curious and paying attention, so many doors are actually available every day for all of us. And that's fully when we're not in victimhood, because it's like, oh, there's 1,000 things I could be doing if I really just saw them. Mm-hmm. Right.
So beautifully put. And I think that's part of it, understanding What most choices we make are not permanent. We have an opportunity to shift and change. And I've seen that with so many different people, myself included, but you don't have to go to school and get the good job and then you're set for life. That's very rarely what happens these days, I think. I think that's a big part of just someone who has experienced corporate success like yourself, but also a more purpose-driven life that you are living. What advice do you have for individuals who maybe feel trapped in unfulfilling careers, but are hesitant to make that significant change?
So one of my favorite quotes is by Pablo Picasso. And I found it recently, actually, although obviously it's not a new quote. He said that the purpose of life is to find your gift and the meaning of life is to give it away. So actually, I think I flipped those. The meaning of life is to find your gift, purpose to give it away. Because what I find is so many people, especially as we start to get into our middle ages, you know, 30s to 50s, mm-hmm. we've been in a career for a little while. We're like, what's my purpose? I got to find my purpose. I've been just working to live my life and make money, but what's my purpose? Right. What I love about that quote, even though I butchered it, is that we all have the same purpose. Mm-hmm. And it's to give away our gift, our passion, our talent. And so what I encourage anybody, no matter where you're at, is lean into your natural gifts. Maybe it's talking, you know, maybe it's smiling, like you just have an infectious smile, right? I mean, some of these things sound silly, but these gifts like positivity, maybe you're a great teacher. So you start teaching, you know, your kids or a bunch of kids pickleball or soccer, whatever it may be, lean into your gifts, start to develop them. Right. And as you stay curious around it, the stuff that will show up in other ways for you to then not only get better at your gifts, but then to start to give them away. And by the way, giving away doesn't mean you can't make money for them, right?
Right.
You're giving them out to the world. Mm-hmm. That's the path to not like blow up your life and be like, I got to do something totally different. No, right. Just actually go back to the gifts that you know are there, but you're just not using all the time because you're like, oh, my job doesn't pay me. Great. Lean back into them. Yeah. See what shows up.
I love that. I think it's important to recognize that you can lean into your gifts. You can get paid for what you're able to do, but a lot of people shy away from that because it's off the path, like the paved road. Like you're creating your own path, your own road. Yeah. And that's okay. And you're a living example of that as well. Like you had one path you were on and you completely shift gears and have had success from that by listening to yourself, allowing yourself to remain curious and open to the opportunities that were just egging yeah. on. They're like right there, but they started to come through a little bit stronger each time. And because Aunt is very risk-taking, you have to take risks. You can't kind of sit idle, but being able to involve those risks that you did take by starting to write a book and being able to publish it, how has your perspective on risk-taking evolved from your corporate career to your current endeavors?
While I'd be more apt to take risks that a lot of people wouldn't take, the risks I took in business were driven by my desire to make myself look good or to succeed in some way. Sometimes calculated, sometimes not. Sometimes they're just taking a risk because I knew I was a risk taker and that's why people worked with me sometimes, which wasn't necessarily the most positive reason to be a risk taker. Today, I still take risks, you know, pausing from business, writing a book, self-publishing, which is a journey on its own. But it's often I take risks to be vulnerable, to just show up and be myself and to put it out there. And I know that when I take risks around sharing my gifts, however that looks, it's always worth it. Mm. Always.
I'm so glad you said the vulnerability piece because that's what I was hoping you were going to say, because I know that's a huge part of what you embody and what you are putting out in the world. Yeah. And risks aren't just business risks. It's also sharing your story, being open to knowing where you came from and where you're at as well in that journey. And I'm really curious, with your journey of publishing your book, what was that like? So if somebody is in that process or wanting to start that process, what does that look like for you?
Yeah, I think you have to write for yourself. But otherwise, every time I didn't write, just sit down and just start writing for no specific person, but just what I knew had to come out of me, right? Those are the days I was blocked. Those are the days I couldn't write, or I had to go back and scrap it because it just, the tone wasn't the same. The authenticity didn't come through in the same way. So writing for no other reason than for yourself, for your gift, for your passion. And with the self-publishing journey, you know, I think this, the scariest part is getting awareness around what you're doing. And honestly, unless you're one of the rare, you know, million plus booksellers, you know, there's probably under 50 or maybe under 100 of these a year, right? So it's even harder than becoming a professional sports player, right? So putting that to the side, what do the rest of us do? It's vulnerable. It's being on this podcast with you. You know, these are the true stories that resonate with humanity and that we all connect with. And when you are comes through in your writing, then it comes through in your stories when you start to share them with other people like yourself. Yeah. And people can't not listen, because there's a piece of all of us in each other, right? Our stories anyways.
Yeah. It does connect, because everybody feels the same feelings. How we feel it might be different, or how, when we feel it and all those factors. But when we hear a story, you're right, there is a piece of us that can resonate with, mm-hmm. I've gone through that, or I've experienced that indirectly, things along those lines. But being able to recognize that each story has space for us, and it matters, because how it translates, you're helping so many people by sharing your story and being vulnerable in what you went through to get to where you are, and being able to truly start to love yourself from the inside out, to be able to pour into your family, your girls, and everyone around you as well, that whole community that you have and you've created for yourself as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Part of the self-publishing, what were some of the tools that you used in order to make that happen?
Sure. So I did sign up for a self-publishing service that helps you get your ISBN numbers, you know, your book registration numbers, and gets you plugged into Amazon, and then kind of coaches you through things. Some people need that. Looking back, probably wasn't worth the investment there. You can get all that stuff pretty easily. While Amazon, there's the evil side to it being a behemoth. It's also really, really, as a self-published author, to use their Kindle Direct Publishing system. It's and where it gets complicated is where we make it complicated. And really, the only hard part is figuring out where you're going to spend your time and money doing marketing. And maybe the answer is you're not. I mean, I don't spend money on it. I do these things. I share my story. I've tried to find other platforms that, you know, are resonating with the general message and push it out. So I guess if the short formula is, for me, I used Kindle Direct Publishing. I used Fiverr or Upwork to get some of the book cover and some editing work done. And those were really good experiences, because some of that I had done through the company I had, the self-publishing company offered one of those services, and I tried it. And they got stuck in the middle, and it was such a pain in the butt that when I went direct using Upwork or Fiverr, it was beautiful. Like, these people worked, they wanted to do their best work for you, and, you know, and just directly working with amazing creative people. You can support their into practices too. So it's really a fun journey.
Yeah, it sounds fun and very like straightforward, simple. There's other ways to go about it. You can absolutely invest, but it sounds like you can kind of just Google and find other ways to get it done.
You can use Word to write it. It costs, honestly, for under $1,000 between getting a book cover done and editing, it can all come to life.
Yeah, just got to have the want to do it, right? And through your entire journey, what would you say are your top like two or three tips of being an entrepreneur, things that you might have wished you knew in the beginning or have learned along this journey as well?
So the curiosity piece is huge. One of my favorite acronyms that I wish I used more often is WAIT. Why am I talking?
I like that.
So I find myself often, you know, especially now, you know, with my kids, but just wait, pause, take a breath. And really, I mean, this, the key piece is integral in this, but how somebody is showing up, how they're talking, how they're trying to express themselves, their frustrations, or maybe they're agitated in business. It's never about you. It's always about them and their fears. And that's why the curiosity is the core answer to so many of these things. It's like, when we get, when we're like, okay, you're upset for a reason, or you're not liking this for a reason, or we're not communicating right. If we step into curiosity and ask questions, instead, I would just try to like, let me tell you why I'm right. Just shove it home and drive my, you know, never works.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. It can be frustrating, but I think the more work we do on ourselves, the more we become, I know I used to be a little defensive in some of my responses to things in years ago, but being able to remove the wall and just remain curious, remain open to be able to really hear what somebody else is saying versus immediately going in.
Yeah. The thing I'll say on that is, I used to love to give advice, you know, and when you, especially getting to the CEO role all day long, it's like, knock, knock. Hey, what should we do here? Hey, how do we solve this? And you just get used to like firing off, you know, answers.
Yeah.
And while I don't believe in regret and I don't have any there, what would I do today versus, you know, what I had done? And it would be to share experiences instead of advice, and to get, because at the end of the day, I can't think of anything that's been sticky in my life that I've chosen to do that I haven't ultimately come to the conclusion on my own, right? Anytime somebody else has told me I should do something, or I need to do something, or this is the best way, even if I do it, it's just not sticky. It doesn't last because I didn't get there myself.
Yeah.
So when we share our experiences and allow people to find their own answer, even if it's the answer we were hoping they would find anyways, that's when things become meaningful and powerful and lasting, and especially in business.
No, it's so true. Because people can relate to a story. And that's where I think like storytelling, writing really allows people to connect versus saying, you need what we were talking about earlier, when there's books that say 1, 2, and 3, do these and you'll be set, versus actually sharing that vulnerability, sharing that story. People find the bits and parts that resonate with them. And I love that that's what you are all about. That's what you've been able to put out in this world. And I know you have so many things in the pipeline. You already mentioned you're working on a second book, coaching, just exploring. What does the future look like for you in the next few months or year? I know you stay present, but what does that look like right now?
Yeah, I started a men's group called Bold Men Fellowship. I've had being a man, you know, I resonated on this really deep level with other men around toxic masculinity, which I don't believe is a real thing. I think it's just toxic expression of masculinity. I think masculinity and femininity are both always beautiful. It's just how do we behave with them, right? What's our expression of them?
Yeah.
And in this realm, for I now know of to be able to step into their feminine nature and not lose their masculinity. And, you know, this needs to, masculine femininity needs to live in both men and women, you know, in a shared congruous way. But a lot of women today are scared to step into their femininity because they have to be so masculine, right? They have to live those traits too deeply. And a lot of men aren't, like, a true masculine is groundedness. And I've found, like, in my partnerships, intimate partnerships, if I can show up in this grounded way, this healthy grounded way, it allows my partner to step into her feminine in a way that she's too afraid to sometimes, because she's like, no, I got to show up and pay the bills and you know, be in my career and do these things, which, yes, and, you know, we can provide these two pieces for each other. And there's not a lot of support for men, and there's a lot of shame and guilt for men, and not a lot of, hey, here's how we actually solve the problem. So that was the goal of that. But I also do, you know, my passion is in marketing. So I do combination, like, executive coaching around communication, because communication not only lives in how we do product branding and corporate messaging, But that's like the Trojan horse for me to come in and talk about internal communication, right?
Absolutely.
Sell you on external communication, but what you really need is this internal communication.
Exactly. Well, I love it. And I so appreciate you saying the and, because I do think you can be both. It's a matter of, it's very fluid, depending on the situation and recognizing when you need to show up a certain way, but not negating everything else around you. And I love that you said the grounded piece, because I think the more we are grounded, the more we can see things a little clearer versus having to be complete opposite sides. But again, it's very fluid, and you made that very clear too in a beautiful way. So I appreciate you sharing that. And then I have been so enjoying this conversation, Brent, but where can people find your book, find you, your coaching, your group? We're going to link everything below, but if you could let us know too.
Yeah. So you can find the book all over Amazon. It's in all versions. And I actually just recorded the audiobook. So that's on Audible or on Apple or Google. I completely, you can find it on either one too. So if you need my voice to help lull you to sleep, it's available. And yeah, the biggest thing is as a self-publisher, I just have to remind people is leaving reviews, even if it's not a, a written review, just a clicking that 5-star button. Not many people do it. That's the most meaningful way, whether it's for me or another self-published person, you know, that's the most meaningful way you can show appreciation. And then my website, 3X Bold, the number 3, the letter X Bold. So, which is really about being bold in body, mind, and spirit. That website is where you can see what I'm currently up to and everything I'm doing. So.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Brent, for just being so transparent, honest, and remaining curious in the world to help others, give permission for them to do it too. But I appreciate you coming on and just sharing your amazing story with us and your journey, the highs, lows, everything in between, but amazing things that you are doing and putting out in this world. So I appreciate you coming on today.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment below what was the biggest takeaway from today, and we'll see you on the next episode.